I dedicate at least 10% of my day every day, and it's really probably like 20% because I thought it was 20%, to giving back or giving forward, to helping others. It is ingrained in what I do. And sometimes people are like, are you doing something else that's not going to generate revenue? But it's important for me to sow those seeds, to help other people. I literally have blocked 2 hours on my calendar every day to talk to people, to have conversations about either helping an individual or an organization.
Welcome to How Women Inspire, where women lead, invest, and give. I'm your host, Julie Castro-Abrams, founder and CEO of How Women Lead and managing partner of the venture firm How Women Invest. Feminist, social justice warrior, mother, friend of 50,000 plus badass women, and an expert at helping top executive women get on boards and break down barriers for women entrepreneurs, investors, and social impact activists. In this podcast, we interview women influencers and leaders from across the globe who are in the C-suite, founding companies, investing, and agents of change. We'll share stories of how women lead. We'll provide insights and data, tips you can put into action, and get to know the women who have fiercely and unabashedly stepped into their power in leadership and opened doors for other women like you. We discuss topics ranging from the journey of getting a board seat, how we can counter cultural frameworks that change the way the world views women leaders, what we're doing to close the gender funding gap, and driving equity for women in all aspects of life and career. My goal is that after every episode, you walk away feeling inspired, unstoppable, ready to level up and step into your power and influence. I want to break down the cultural narratives that hold us back collectively and those messy messages you heard that are taking up way too much of your brain space. I want you to know you're invited in because I know that together we can change the culture, change opportunities, and create the future we want for our daughters and sisters and friends. This is our time. Are you in? Welcome to How Women Inspire. Our guest today is Andrea Henderson, the partner in the Life Sciences Healthcare Diversity CEO and Board Practice Groups at DHR Global. So excited to dive in and hear about that broad swath of engagement. Andrea is, I know you as just an extraordinary executive talent strategist and people architect, and you previously served as the Director of Partner Solutions and Executive Search at a career acceleration and talent sourcing platform for underrepresented healthcare and life science leaders. She's passionate about health equity and women's health. Thank God we need you. Previously working in seriously impactful roles for a number of healthcare and life science organizations, you were with Trinity Health, SUNY Downstate Medical Center, Genentech, and Pfizer. Andrea, in addition to all these big corporate jobs and the leadership that you've asserted in building those companies and their teams, you've also, you're a startup company advisor and a venture investor and an ambassador for an effort to get more of us investing in venture capital called the New Table Campaign. What a treat to have a conversation with you today. You are just one of the people I most look forward to spending time with because of how so mission and values aligned you are with the things that you and I both care about in the world. So I'm so excited for us to have a conversation today.
I am excited about it too. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well, what a treat for everybody who's getting a chance to meet you, Andrea. Let's start with some fun. What is your theme song that you use or that song that you go to lift you up in the times that are challenging or to celebrate when you have a win?
Yeah, you know what's interesting? During challenging times, I really lean very heavily on gospel music. And so there's a song by Bishop Paul Moore that's called Don't Do It Without Me. And in the song, he's begging God to let him live longer so that he can contribute to other people's healings and blessings. He's saying, I have so much more to do and I have so much more to give. So please don't do it without me. For me, that's kind of what gives me strength because I know I have so much to do.
Well, we've had conversations before where people say, okay, when are you going to be ready to retire? And you say, no, never. Where is that coming from? Is that what this is part of for you?
Absolutely. I think because my work is so mission driven, it's a calling. Why would I stop? The joke is that I never want to stop. I want to die at my desk. I want to collapse on my keyboard, and I want to be paid for the full week. So I always tell people, if I keel over on my keyboard, that's the way I want to go out.
Well, I feel like for so many people, you know, the work environments have not evolved enough where people feel that and want to be in that place. And having you in the talent and people sort of space has got to be such an incredible gift. Can you talk about the career path that led you to this role? I mean, how did you get there?
Yes. So I have a bachelor's and master's in international affairs, and I thought I wanted to be an ambassador. I had gone on a couple of mission trips, one to West Africa right after undergrad, and then my first master's program had gone to Sri Lanka with the Agency for International Development. That's where I wrote my thesis. And I came back to a really tough job market and got a job in writing international employee relations reports for a consulting firm. Eventually expanded that into sort of consulting around global HR. And what I realized between surviving and thriving and living my mission is that I enjoyed helping the most vulnerable self-actualize. I enjoyed helping organizations leverage the talent that they had to get the most out of their organization and thrive. And combining that is really kind of what led me to talent acquisition, talent management. I've worked across the talent lifecycle, talent, succession planning, all of that stuff. But I think it was, and I think so many people had epiphanies during the pandemic, is really when health equity became a really core piece of what inspires me. Seeing so many vulnerable people, underrepresented people suffer because their caretakers, their caregivers, the clinicians didn't understand, didn't reflect, right, the same sort of demographics. And I was personally impacted by that really sort of tragic story. And it moved me. And I said, I have to do something about this. This has to be part of how I contribute.
I would love to hear your thoughts on, like, how do we get to that point? Is it really about talent and having diverse physicians and providers? And that's the only way people are going to really be understood is by having that kind of a evolution?
No, initially, I think it is. There are statistics that show, for example, when Black patients are cared for by Black doctors, the health outcomes are much better. But eventually, and since we have a shortage of clinicians, it's just not possible everywhere. But eventually, I think by working side by side with diverse clinicians, other clinicians that are not diverse will come to understand the population.
Yeah.
I think also by highlighting the issues, every single time I go to the doctor, probably to the point of being annoyed, whenever they put an oximeter on my finger, I always ask, are you aware that these read Black people's, you know, that the scale for Black people is different? And some people say, oh, I've heard it's because of the nail polish wrong. That's ridiculous. Where did you hear that on TikTok? And I always point them to the research because you have to make sure that people are aware of the differences so that they can treat. I think the biases are sometimes born from ignorance. And so, yes, I think initially, if we have more diverse clinicians, if we have more diverse decision makers, leaders, and board members.
You've heard me say it before. My goal is for you to run the world. And let me tell you why. It's not just because I think you're fabulous, badass, and you know that I do. It is actually protective for all of us. When you have diversity on a board, for example, product recalls happen 3 times faster. Companies perform better. It's better for people. It's better for profits. And it's better for the planet. We need you to join a corporate board. And we need you to know when to advocate for it in your day job. October 16th through the 20th, How Women Lead is hosting our extremely successful 4th annual Get On Board Week. This week is full of virtual programming, content rich, but also connecting, connecting, connecting. And we know 85% of all board searches, they're word of mouth and through connections. We want to connect you with private equity firms that are seeking board members. We want to connect you with other women board members who've already done it, who are being tagged and can't take all the board seats that are coming their way. We will have board opportunities that we will share with you. Really, truly, this is our way to connect and propel you. This is 1 week, but what happens is people connect with people on LinkedIn, or they create mastermind groups that they support each other all year long. I want you to step up and be part of the solution. My daughter needs you on the board. But I also want to inspire you to think about all the women around you, where you can be the person who inspires her and says, I see you on a board. I think you should be on a board. Check it out. Come and explore. Invite 10 friends. Tell them that you believe in them. It's the greatest gift you can give. Somebody did it for you. And I want to encourage you to do it for another woman. I look forward to seeing you at Get On Board Week so we can get thousands of women on boards. This year, our focus beyond the private boards that we've always focused on, we're adding the private board space. It's time. Thanks for your partnership. Send the letter back down and help another woman get into action. I know as a woman, you know, I have had of menopause age, I've had so many experiences. And I finally gave up on trying to figure out solutions because I felt like everyone dismisses you. And then I finally found like a very specialty company called MIDI, which is a organization that is designed to help women who are in menopause get hormone replacement therapy and other things. And it was magic. I walked away like, 10 minutes, I feel seen. I feel like you get me. I feel like I got a solution. I got meds within another 20 minutes at the CVS and I was done. And it felt like, to me, some of the solution has to also be in specialty services. Otherwise, you know, somebody who's not saying, I specifically understand and get where your specific issues and needs are. It's just this one size fits all just is not working. It's challenging. Anyway, all right. I'm giving you my opinion.
I appreciate that. And I want to tell you how much I appreciate the podcast and all that you're doing, because it all starts with dialogue. If we don't talk about it, we don't realize what the options are. We don't realize that we're all suffering and that we don't have to suffer in silence. And for me, my mom has dementia, so she can't tell me what her experience was or how to deal with it. So I need to lean on other women like you and women in the network for some of this. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. To have somebody who's so passionate and committed, really building the talent strategies and pipeline and really helping companies wrestle with how do we be better and serve people better so people have better health outcomes, help everybody. So thank you so much for that. Beyond your passion and mission around your work, you are an extraordinary community leader. And I have seen how you step up, Andrea. You don't just say it. You don't just show up. You literally do what you say. And it's so extraordinarily impressive. And I adore seeing you in action. I just love it. How did you make that time? And I've heard you say the word tithe your time. What does that even mean? How do you think about that? And how can other people learn?
Yeah, well, there's a concept of tithing, giving 10% of your income most often. And I tithe my time. And actually, you know, I was looking at it in preparation for this conversation, and I actually thought it was 20%. But I dedicate at least 10% of my day, every day, and it's really probably like 20% because I thought it was 20%, to giving back or giving forward, to helping others. It is ingrained in what I do. And sometimes people are like, are you doing something else that's not going to generate revenue? But it's important for me to sow those seeds, to help other people. I literally have blocked 2 hours on my calendar every day to talk to people, to have conversations about either helping an individual or an organization. And that's what I consider tithing my time. It's a part of my DNA.
Well, that's extraordinary. And that sounds like more than 20%, unless 10-hour days are the norm for you. So thank you for doing that. And that's a beautiful structural example of what people can do. I always talk about middle essence being this moment of reset, and women need to have an impact and do things with other women to be happy. Is there a moment in time when you're like, that's when I started actually really structuring it this way? What was the moment that you were like, I'm structuring this?
I think the point I became intentional is when I had more control over my calendar, because earlier in my career, I didn't have as much control. I think I was still doing it, but not in the same way. And at some point you grow in your career where you have more flexibility.
Right.
And then I could structure it that way. But I think I've always been that way. I went to a Jesuit college, even though I'm not Catholic. It's just always been a part of the way I was trained to. Too much is given, much is expected.
Beautiful. I say that to my kids all the time. They're young adults, and I'm not sure we're there yet. So maybe one of these days, one of those 2-hour calls, you can have my kids. I'm a part of it. So different voices are heard in different ways. So you tithe your time in significant ways, but you also are really conscious about your investing. When did you start thinking about and getting inspired about investing in venture capital and really start to be an agent of change in this space? Because you certainly are. I've seen you in action.
Yeah. So I was inspired to invest after having a mammogram and having the mammogram find something and then having to do a biopsy and then being asked to do another mammogram. And so at that point, I really felt that it was barbaric. And I literally said, this is the person, I feel so bad for her. But that day the technician caught my mouth. It was barbaric to ask me to do a mammogram after having a biopsy. They're bad enough. Yeah. And then to do it again, I said, there must be a better way. And she said, no, this isn't. This is the standard of care. And I said, history will not be kind to us. There are a lot of things that happen to women, which I won't mention because it's controversial, but there are a lot of things that happen to women in the world today and have happened to women in the past where we said, that was barbaric. And I said, yep. History will not judge us kindly looking back on this. Something needs to be done. And when I investigated further, and I figured that the reason why a different diagnostic had not been found was because there weren't enough of us in the room, yep, making these decisions, right, about what's a priority, right, and where the funding goes. And I wanted to do something different. I wanted to be a part of the solution. Now, that being said, coincidentally, at the same time, I came to find out about how women invest. I have no idea how it came to me, to be honest with you. I have no idea. It wasn't like a friend said, oh, you
divine intervention.
It was divine intervention. What I realized, though, in my zest, to help fund these types of solutions is that I had no idea what I was doing. So, and I don't have money to throw away. So what I wanted to do was to be a part of an organization, a part of a solution that invested in women, right, who are going to come up with solutions more often than not that help women. And I wanted to do it with other women who would be sympathetic to my cause. And that's what led me to How Women Invest.
Would you share a little bit more? So you found How Women Invest. What was your investment process like? Did you use retirement funds? Were you able to, how did you structure that? I think it's interesting for people listening to this.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I always say, you know, I'll put $2 on it. But yes, I did use an IRA from an old former employer. And I used some of those funds. I learned about the fact that it's really great to have some of this asset class in your portfolio. So I feel really good about allocating a percentage of my portfolio to that. And I feel really good about having the funds to do it when I didn't think that I did.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you, Andrea, I am literally seeing take home tools to do at-home mammogram type tests, really, really early detection. So there is innovation run by women. So I hope that you meet your personal sort of initial inspiration for this. I hope the solution comes as a result of the work that we're doing together as investors in early stage companies. So you also are bringing other women along in this journey. Why is that so important to you? I've seen you invite 10, 20 women to an event or a call to hear about how they can step into their own power and influence with investing in other ways. What's the response been like, and why did you decide to extend your personal network?
Well, I think because I feel like there are many more women like me who want to have impact on, they want to align their values and they're investing, or they're investing with their values. They may not think about it, but when I bring it up, it's something that's important to me and they want to learn more. Okay. They don't know how to do it like I didn't. You know, I went to business school. You would think, oh, well, that should be natural for you. But it wasn't something that was made to seem accessible. And I think sometimes that's by design, that people make things seem harder and scarier than it really is because they don't want people to come in. And so I wanted to invite the people that in my network to learn more about it, to say, if this is something that is interesting to you, you can do it. And there are people and programs to show you how to do it where it's not so intimidating.
Demystifying it and inviting other women. We have this campaign called The New Table, where it's inviting other women to sit at the table with us as investors. And I think that's really, you are the shining example of exactly what we're trying to accomplish, which is a friend to reach out to a friend and say, hey, let's demystify this. So when it's right for you, you can come along and be a part of this. So you said at the beginning of this call that you want to be doing this mission-oriented work until the very last day. Do you have a big, hairy, audacious goal or something where you have yet to achieve specifically?
Well, yeah, I want to do more. I want to go deeper. I am working now more closely with specific initiatives to help drive health equity and women's health, one of which I have the liberty to talk about. I'm working with the New York City Fund for Public Health that has a birth equity initiative to reduce Black maternal mortality rates in New York City. And there's a specific initiative around that that I'm really excited to help them with. And so I would like to do more of that where there's data and there are outcomes. And I can say, you know, I helped make that happen, or I'm working with an organization on this initiative. And I would like to do that from the boardroom on the cap table, because I know that's really where you'll have an impact. And I think that's something else I'm thankful to how women lead and how we invest for, is really explaining how powerful it is to be in those seats and to be able to have a different type of conversation. Yeah. My entire career has been a thread of talent and diversity. But I've realized how important it is to really diversify the boardrooms and the investor base. Yeah. And so that's what I'm focused on.
I love that. I mean, this is the taking all the things that you've done so well and really saying, what's the power play that closes the gap so that we don't have to do these ameliorative things later on? We got to get more women leading these companies, more women in the boardroom. Then we have a chance of there being less inequity in pay and inequity in the different opportunities related to everything, including health. Thank you so much, Andrea, for sharing what a beautiful example of architecting a life of meaning with your drumbeat of your values and things that are of value to you, and then putting on the gospel music and dancing around the house at the end of the day because you did it. I just have this view of you that is, even the way you talk, I know everybody listening, you hear it. Like, you're just like a, you know, butter or a warm bath. Like, you're just, you're perfectly placed in everything related to talent because of how you show up in the world. You're so warm. If you could leave the audience with sort of one final piece of advice, I know everyone's leaning in and is sage advice from a woman who's really living her values. What would that be?
When I was growing up, my parents would always say, don't say I can't. What I learned later is the better way to approach it is to say, how can I?
Yeah.
Right. Somebody saw these big mainframe computers and said, how can I put this in a smaller device so people could carry it around?
Yeah.
And I see women every day saying, you know, how can I raise my kids alone and work and. And I feel like my advice to people is to keep asking, how can I? And then you will find out what resources you need or who you need to help you to get there. But how can I is one of the most powerful questions there is.
I love that. That's beautiful. How can people find you if they want to invite you to on the board or in other ways get involved with something that they think is a good alignment?
I think the easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm Andrea Henderson with a bunch of letters after my name.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much for sharing the gift of you with us today. I know everybody who's listening, it's a moment of reflection for all of us to think about how are we architecting our lives thoughtfully so that we can look back and say, I tithed my time. I made smart decisions on how I invested that was aligned with my values. And I made sure other women were along for the power play and the ride. Any board, any venture funds that you're involved with, anyone you touch is so lucky to have you. So thank you so much, Andrea, for your time today.
I enjoyed my time.
And with that, I want to thank you all for listening to today's episode of How Women Inspire. And because your inspiration should not stop when this podcast ends, head over to our website, howwomenlead.com. Follow us on LinkedIn at How Women Lead and subscribe or follow on your favorite podcast app to find out how you can proactively take charge and step into your power through our workshops and activism. In our loving network, we want to propel you. See you next time, ladies. And remember to be unabashedly visible.